This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rico Bronyas, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
All right, we'll cut the intros. I don't have to say hi, how are you? We all are doing the same way. We are pissed, we are disgusted, and we're fuming at a baseball team that finds new ways to hit rock bottom. A baseball team that finds new ways to embarrass themselves. It's almost like, hey, let's create a script. Let's find a way for this Met team that has sucked for months now. They have been awful for months now, gutless for months now. Let's find a way, like a new way, a creative way for them to embarrass themselves on national television, embarrass every Met fan that still has any belief in this team. Let's find a new way to do that. And if I got in the lab and Hoff and I said, all right, what's a new way for the Mets to embarrass themselves? What's a new way for them to lose to the Philadelphia Phillies and get swept and put themselves 11 games out? Not that that matters, but it's more the funniness that this was a pennant race not that long ago, and now they're 11 games out. To cut their wild card lead to a measly game and a half, how can they lose to the Phillies? That would just be like hilariously bad. Like in the first few games, we saw them fall behind early, sort of keep it close, never really have a shot, and then watch the bullpen light the game on fire. So we've already done that. We've done that. What's a new way for the Mets to completely embarrass themselves? And if somebody would have told me, oh, I got it, here's what's going to happen. They're going to come out like a house on fire against the completely overrated Jesus Luzardo. They're going to beat him up. Mets are going to steal bases. They're going to get clutch hits. And they're going to take a 4-0 lead. And that 4-0 lead is going to last for a little bit of time. And then slowly but surely, not only are we going to give up the lead, but the Met offense is going to go to sleep. But you know what? No. Go to sleep's not enough. Doing nothing and letting Jesus Luzardo settle down, that's not enough. The Mets blowing a 4-0 lead and losing the game 6-4 lifelessly, that's not enough. I got this other one. How about after a first inning double by Starling Marte? This is going to take the cake. The Mets don't get another freaking base runner. How about that one? How about we let Jesus Luzardo look like he became Sandy Koufax and pitch 1-2-3 inning after 1-2-3 inning after 1-2-3 inning. How about that? How about we allow Jesus Luzardo to retire 22 freaking Mets in a row? How about that? And then even in the ninth inning, with the heart of the batting order coming up, down by two runs against a closer who, while he's elite, the Mets beat up a couple of weeks ago. And by the way, a couple of weeks ago feels like 6 years ago. Let's have him dominate Juan Soto, dominate Pete Alonso, who is a mess right now, and make Mark Vientos look like a fool. Let's get this thing over quickly. Let's say, you know, 12 pitches. I mean, you can't make this up. They go up 4-0 in the first inning. They show fight for the first time in weeks. David Peterson does a fairly good job in the first three innings, working his way through trouble. And the Met bats, and we've seen this before where they cool off. We've seen it before where they score a few runs early and then they go away. That part's not new. You're telling me they can't get a base runner for the final eight innings of this game against Jesus Luzardo? This was a disgrace. And I know better. Like, I know because I remember Joe Torre used to say this. When you're not hitting, it looks like you don't care. And it's easy when a team is not hitting to say they don't care. Maybe it's just me being irrational because this team has sucked the life out of me and you. But does it look like they give a rat's ass? Does it look like they care? It's a broken jukebox after every game. We got the talent. I mean, they're pulling Boones now. It's all right in front of us. They're like freaking zombies. And here's why. I can't believe anymore. Why I can't sit here and tell you, oh, don't worry, they'll be fine. And I know I've said this for a while, but it rings even truer as they are now in the midst of a six-game losing streak. They have been a bad team for months. You can find pockets since the middle of June where they've played reasonably well. But here's a reality check. You could find pockets of anybody playing well over 4 months. You can find pockets where the Rockies have played well over 4 months. You can find pockets where the White Sox have played well. This team, for whatever reason, since the middle of June, they haven't been mediocre. That would be a lie. They have stunk. And because they have stunk so long, I don't know what would make me say into a microphone, oh, but they won't stink for the last 15 games. Why would I say that? I hope I'm wrong. I hope that we can laugh at the way we freaked out in the middle of September, though we'll defend ourselves by saying we had every right to freak out. But this team looks dead. They look lifeless. And worst of all, they look gutless. And what I would say to them, prove us wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong. The Mets had guts last year. The Mets would fight back. How many times did we see them respond? This team rolls over. I get it. It sucks to blow a 4-0 lead. It stinks. It stinks to have Jeff McNeil misjudge a fly ball in center. It's all terrible. Woe is me. You know, when they gave up the lead and they were down 6-4, they had three more innings to come back, two of which against the highly overrated, except against the Mets, Jesus Luzardo. And what did they do? Not only was it 9-9, they struck out 7 times. 8 of the last 10 outs recorded by Phillies pitching came on strikeouts. There were no good at-bats. There were no good approaches. They went down like dogs. And if that sounds mean, it's not mean. I'm describing what I watched. That's all. And when they come home to Citi Field, I hope they don't play like that. I hope they bomb old friend Jacob DeGrom. I hope they show some guts. But spot the lie. They've been gutless. They have been punched in the mouth now. Their lead in the wild card race is all but gone. And where's the response? Where's the urgency? Where's anything?
And I got Carlos Mendoza saying the same stuff over and over and over again since June. Keep it in mind. This is a bad baseball team since June. And I don't want to hear anymore while you're just picking a random date. It's not a random date. They've been bad since June. And as I'm watching them get mowed down, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, I'm thinking to myself, can I trust this team to respond at home? Can I trust this team to find it deep in their soul to win games in their final 15, just enough to make the playoffs? And as much fun as last year was, and it was fun, I can't believe in this team. They haven't shown me enough. They haven't shown us enough. They haven't shown us enough this season. And honestly, 2024 with the core of this team is feeling like an outlier. It's feeling like what happened last year, whether it was the magic of Grimace or OMG or whatever the hell pixie dust was going on, that all feels fake. That all feels fake, like it didn't happen. This feels real. 2023 felt real. 2022, when they choked at the end, felt real. And I'll say this again before we get into the details of this. If they don't make the playoffs, it's worse than 2007. And it's worse than 2008. And I'm afraid that we're headed towards that. And I'm afraid that we're going to have freaking offseason Rico Brunias where we're debating that. Let's not forget how we feel right now in this moment. This is a collapse that hasn't been going on for a couple of weeks. This is a collapse that's been going on for months. And while at moments during the collapse, they've made you say, oh, I think we haven't figured out. The vast majority of time, they have been this. They don't pitch well. They don't hit. And they don't do enough to win games. And in a lot of ways, game four of this series, we'll call it the Jesus Luzardo makes them look like Patsy's game. This is the perfect definition of who they are. Their starting pitcher gives you just a blah performance when he's handed a 4-0 lead. David Peterson finds a way to get through five, but he gave up 3 runs. He had a lead. He almost gave it entirely back. You had a bullpen led by Reed Garrett, who immediately comes into the game, immediately, and lights the game on fire. And Brooks really didn't exactly do yeoman's work either. And you have an offense that for like a split second, like a shooting star, shows you promise and then goes away. This was pathetic. And I think Joe Davis, the Dodger lover, or maybe it was John Smoltz, I can't stand either guy. Not their fault the Mets stink, but they're the wrong messengers today. One of them said it. If they lose this game, this has to be rock bottom. And you know why they don't know what they're talking about? Because they would know that the New York Mets always find a way to give you a new rock bottom. So if you think this is rock bottom, you're being optimistic. And I hope you're right. But unfortunately, I think rock bottom is when these guys miss the playoffs. And that is going to be a mark on the resume of Carlos Mendoza. That's going to be tough to get off. And yes, David Stearns, that's certainly a mark on your resume, considering every acquisition you've made over the trade deadline and the offseason, not named Juan Soto. I'll be blunt. Every move you've made to a T has sucked. Now, it happens. Not going to bat 1,000, but you're under the Mendoza line. And those two guys, while they're certainly not going to lose their job, and I'm not suggesting they should, it goes on that resume. And ask Willie Randolph what a choke job looks on a resume. Fair or not, it did him in. And that's where this team is headed. Now, what should Carlos Mendoza do? I can give you my baseball opinions, like stop playing Luis Angel Acuna. He can't hit. He's useful as a speedster off the bench. He's useful as defense off the bench. He's not useful as a starter, and he's certainly not useful as a pinch hitter like we saw in game one. So, just a little baseball advice. That's one thing. I don't know if it's throwing chairs. I don't know if it's screaming at these guys and calling them out for what they are, which has basically been glass-jawed dogs for the last 3 months, 4 months. I don't know if that works. So I don't know what the hell Carlos Mendoza can do. I guess for our own mental health, and this probably won't do any good either, but again, for our own mental health, maybe it would be sort of good for us, for Carlos Mendoza to look into the camera and say, we suck, and this is unacceptable. Is that going to make me feel that much better? Probably not. Is it going to make you feel that much better? Probably not. But they could try. Now, with that said, let's get into the game. Where do you want to start? Want to start with that first inning? I mean, it was great to see Lindor start the game off with a base hit. I didn't realize he knew where first base was. I was kind of surprised when he got there. And it was good to see Juan Soto roll run through for a base hit. And it was also really good to see Soto and Lindor steal a base in a timely fashion. I mean, Juan Soto actually picked a good time to steal a base. It wasn't stat padding. It was, let me set Pete Alonso up with second and third and nobody out. Now, Pete, on the other hand, I love Pete. He's a mess. And I'd love to crunch the numbers on his clutch stats really in the last month, but it feels like it has fallen off the rooftop after a really good start. So with second and third and nobody out, he strikes out, I think, on a changeup that was right down the middle. And I'm looking at Mark Vientos and I'm thinking, Mark, I mean, I don't care if it's a sacrifice fly. I don't care if it's a weak ground ball. The Mets at that point with second and third, nobody out, had to end up with a run. Had to be one. You cannot turn second and third, nobody out into nothing. Can't happen. And a credit to Mark Vientos. He was behind in the count, one and two. I'm waiting for Lizardo to try to get him to chase on a changeup low and away. And he dunked one in a right field for a clutch RBI single. And then Brandon Nimmo, who's been very quiet, rips a base hit to right field. And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, oh my God, the Mets have a lead? Think about the way this series has gone. They've not only trailed for the majority of the innings being played in this series, but they trail right away. The last two nights, they were losing before they got back up in the second inning. And in game one against Aaron Nola, I think they went down in the second inning. So to take an early lead, especially at 2-0, felt different. And then even Starling Marte came through, getting out of his batting slump by ripping that double to left field. And when McNeil lined out, and it was unfortunate because it was hard contact, it was right at Lizardo, and it turned into that 1-6 double play, I wasn't even mad. And I wasn't even negative to think, wow, that's going to be the only base runners they get. I wasn't even negative to think that, wow, that's such bad luck. This is going to lead to the downfall of the Met offense. I didn't think that. But I tell you what I did think. I thought that David Peterson's response in the bottom of the first inning was going to be really important. Because if he immediately gives a run back, not all of them, just even a run back, it would almost be a buzzkill because you know what the Phillies are capable of. When he gave up the leadoff double to Harrison Bader, who, I mean, there are just no more words to describe Harrison Bader. And I can't say anything negative about him. I know that when he gets base hits and he's pointing to the sky and he's pointing everywhere, and then when he makes a play in center field with the way he runs backwards, he's flipping his arms around. I can't hate it because honestly, last year, and I've never been a huge Bader guy. I always thought he was a fourth outfielder, but I always loved that shtick when he was here. He's just doing the same crap he did when he was on the Mets. My anger isn't at Harrison Bader. My anger is at David Stearns. Because he could have kept Harrison Bader. They could have traded for Harrison Bader. And he made the decision to trade for Cedric Mullins, who stinks. And was stinking all year. I remember saying this at the trade deadline. We did the drive home trade deadline, Rico. I said, look, Cedric Mullins isn't any good. But maybe you bring him into a new environment. Maybe you put him in a pennant race. We'll get to see all-star Cedric Mullins from 4 years ago. The odds of that happening are just very low. Usually guys are what they are. And while Bader's been awesome as a Philly, he was having a good year before that. So it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. And you know what? He probably does want to stick it to the Mets. Let's not forget, Bader basically became a nothing during the postseason last year. He lost his starting job. And I thought it was fair. I don't think the Mets handled him wrong. He wasn't performing. This is a performance business. And I think by the time the Mets got to the playoffs, Tyrone Taylor was a better option. So I don't think the Mets did anything wrong, but you can tell with the way he's torturing this team and enjoying every second of it, he wanted to stick it to the Mets. But David Peterson did a really good job fighting through that first inning and not letting Bader's leadoff double turn into the Phillies getting a run back. Did the same thing in the second inning. Gave up a leadoff hit, immediately got a double play, gave up a double to Edmundo Sosa, gets Brandon Marsh out. And so I thought through the first three innings, David Peterson was doing his job. He was making the big pitches when he needed to. But as the game started creeping on, and I'm sure Met fans, you agree with me this, fellow Ricoers, as they went down meekly 1-2-3 in the second and 1-2-3 in the third, there was that little seed of, uh-oh, are they going to score another run? Uh-oh, did the Met offense think they hit its quota? Like, ah, we got four, we're good. And so now every time the Phillies put a guy on base, I got more nervous because I started to think, wow, is this it? Are they going to really try to make four be the difference in this game? And when Otto Kemp hit the two-run home run off David Peterson with one out in the fourth inning, that made it a 4-2 game, I knew what you knew, what we all knew, and what turned out to be true. Four was never going to be enough. It was nice that they scored four against Lizardo in the first inning. It was not going to be enough. Once the Phillies made it 4-2 in the fourth, and Peterson responded, he struck the next two guys out. So he got to the fifth inning in a 4-2 game, and now if you're counting outs, which I shouldn't be doing, but I was, 15 outs with a two-run lead, I'm like, no way. They need more runs. And this offense, I mean, how many balls did they actually hit hard? Think about that. They not only couldn't get a base runner. I'll look through it because I actually write that crap down. Soto hit one decently hard, then a strikeout, fly ball to right field. Nice play by Bryce Harper on a Brandon Nimmo ground ball. Back-to-back strikeouts. Acuna had a bloop and Castellanos made a diving play. Senga little pop up the shortstop. Lindor a weak-ass ground ball to first base. Soto ground ball to first base. Alonso weak ground ball to shortstop. Strikeout. Nimmo bloop to left. Strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Really good play by, I think it was the shortstop at Mundo Sosa against Alvarez. That Alvarez should have beaten. But that wasn't hard contact. Strikeout, 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 strikeout. They didn't even hit the ball hard.
On Tuesday, August 26th, it's FanDuel Futures Day, a new holiday for football fans. It's 24 hours of deals on all your football season predictions. So take a flyer on the MVP race. Who's your pick for the crown? You think it'll be Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes? Who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl? You going Eagles? You going Chiefs? You going someone else? You could also parlay your division winner dark horses. Mark your calendars. This is your day for your hunches, your hot takes, your calls, and your odds. Visit the FanDuel app today and start playing your futures bets now because Future Day is one day and one day only. FanDuel, play your game.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Mendy can't even give us the BS. Oh, it was a lot of bad luck. The bats went to sleep. It was a perfect example of the LD Met offense. They gave you four early and they went to bed. Meanwhile, not knowing that this would definitely happen, this was a slow death because Peterson gives up another run in the fifth inning and it happens with two outs. That's what was a killer against Bryce Harper, who the Mets have handled fairly well. Hits one right over the bag, goes into the right field corner. I thought he was going to get a triple, and now it's 4-3. And again, David Peterson gets a big out. He strikes out JT Realmuto. I'll be honest with you. I was ready to pull David Peterson after he gave up the hit to Harper because Reed Garrett was warming up, and I started to feel like, all right, this is it. He's done. I don't care what his pitch count was. I think it was in the mid-80s at that point. So I would have actually prematurely went to Garrett to face JT Realmuto. And little did I know that even though Peterson would get the next out, Reed Garrett would come in the game and, like every other reliever, set the game on fire. He gives up that leadoff double to Castellanos, but I do want to get to the McNeil miss on the Otto Kemp RBI double. So Garrett's ahead 0-2. I would have preferred him bury a splitter in the dirt, maybe get him to chase, but he did get a fly ball to center field. And there is no question, I think we'd all agree, Jeff McNeil agreed after the game, that was an absolute misplay, and it was a killer. This, though, goes back to the president of the New York Mets. That's what it goes back to. The fact that the Mets are better off, because they are, they're better off with Jeff McNeil in center field. They're better off with a guy who had to learn the position this year while he was rehabbing back in April. The fact that they are better off with him playing center field is an indictment on David Stearns. It's an indictment on the roster. It's an indictment on the fact that if he wanted to get a center fielder at the trade deadline because he didn't trust Jeff McNeil's defense, and how could you? I thought he's played the position well, so I've complimented him because he's deserved it. But when you aren't dealing with a guy who doesn't have that much experience there, this is bound to happen. And it's bound to happen in a big spot. And it's bound to happen to kill you. But you needed a center fielder, and you got a guy who is so bad, the manager, rightfully so, won't play now. So who's that on? Now, it's on Jeff McNeil. He's got to make the play. He's not a center fielder. And the reason he's playing center field and is the best option to play center field is because of the roster. And for anyone who says, oh, shut up, Evan, you didn't like Harrison Bader last year. Well, guess what? I'm not the team president. And when you rip me for my opinions, that's fine. I'll live with it. I know when I'm right or wrong. I'm not getting paid to build the team. So I have every right to say, while I may not have loved Harrison Bader, David Stearns could have acquired him. He didn't. He let him go to Philly. He's torturing the Mets. Meanwhile, he acquired Cedric Mullins, who stinks, and the manager won't play because he stinks. That's on David Stearns. That ain't on me. All I'm doing, just like all we're doing as fans, as paying customers, is explaining what the garbage we're seeing. That's what led to Jeff McNeil misjudging a fly ball to center field. What led to it is that he's their best option. And he's their best option because of the way the team was built. I'm just explaining it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So with that said, so he gives up the double. The Mets can still get out of it tied. They're allowed to. And Reed Garrett almost did because he got Sosa to ground out. It felt like he pitched around Brandon Marsh, and then he strikes out Weston Wilson, and here we are. Two on, two out, tie game, Harrison Bader. Did we not all know how this would go? We've seen guys kill the Mets, especially former Mets. The one that jumps out at us is Daniel Murphy. Now, we've all made peace with Daniel Murphy. We all love Daniel Murphy. But the reality is, he killed us. He's one of those guys that during the offseason, we could have him on the killer series, and it would be great. He could talk about how he shoved our faces into manure for 2.5 years. But he would also be on the We Love You edition of Rico Bronya, a great Met talking about his Met tenure. Rarely can you do both. Murphy can do both. Harrison Bader can't, but he's in the killer series. We all knew it was just a matter of how that Harrison Bader with two outs in a tie game in the sixth inning was going to deliver. Let it be another FU to the president who damn screwed up. And I can't wait because David Stearns, I do respect him. I appreciate him. I appreciate the fact that he speaks to the media basically before every homestand. I can't wait to see him on Friday or Saturday or Sunday or Monday or whenever he decides to speak. Because for the first time, he grew up a Met fan. He's been running this team for a year and a half. But for the first time, he's going to hear it. And he's going to feel it. And it's part of the business. Brian Cashman has felt it, and he's dealt with it for many, many years. But this was an awful trade deadline. And now that we are only 15 games away from completing a regular season, let's be honest, it was an awful offseason. Now, there's still a chance that Mets make the playoffs, go on a deep run, and, you know, we're all laughing. And there's confetti at the down the Canyon of Heroes. I can't even say with a straight face. I mean, who the hell could see that happening? But this is bad. And, of course, Harrison Bader delivers. And, of course, Bryce Harper hits one where Pete Alonso is about to make a diving play. He's about to keep it at one run. He can't hold on to the baseball. Another run scores. But you know what's funny about that play? And this is not to exonerate Pete Alonso, who had yet another terrible series. He did. He had a terrible series. And he's had a terrible few weeks. And he is as big of a part of the problem right now as anybody. But what's funny about that Pete Alonso play against Bryce Harper is we all knew it didn't freaking matter. Because we knew down now by a run with 9 outs to play, the glass jaw would be in full effect. There's no way the Mets, after blowing a 4-0 lead, and after watching Harrison Bader stick it to him again, and after watching the offense go so meekly for such a long period of time, we knew there's no way they'd respond. If somehow they did, if this was the game where the Mets finally won a game trailing after 8, or in this case, trailing after 6, I think I would have sat here and said into a microphone, wow, that may be the win that saves their season. And I thought about that as they began the 7th inning. But before I could get more thoughts into my head, the inning was over. Because they went down so meekly and so softly. And so, no, game 4 of the 4-game series against the Phillies, a game in which they had a 4-0 lead, a game in which they still had a chance in the 7th, 8th, and 9th, would not be the game to save their season. And here we are. And yes, for anyone who anxiously awaits a Rico Bronya via YouTube, they may have noticed that at about 5:30 today, the YouTube link was up and it was labeled Mets Get Swept by the Phillies. And that came because Hoff and I spoke to each other today and we said, we know they're getting swept. We just know it. So is this a reverse jinx? Sure. If it worked, we could call it that, even though reverse jinxes are stupid and not real. It was just that you knew. It's almost like you knew the moment they lost on Monday 1-0 the way they did. Like the Atlanta series earlier this year when they blew a 5-run lead, you just knew. Once they lost that game, it was going to spiral. It was going to avalanche. And nothing was going to stop it. And nothing did. And that's why in game two and in game three, the Mets got embarrassed. They got tarred. They got feathered. They were non-competitive messes. But to cap it all off, the magician needed to give us their greatest magic trick, which is finding a creative new way to lose. I could give you thoughts about game three, because on the Rico, we go through every game. But what thought would you want? Clay Holmes put the first four guys on base. He hit two batters. They're down 2-0 before you can blink. The Met offense gets out a measly run on a shockingly amazing RBI single by Starling Marte to make it 2-1. And it instantly gets erased on a double play. And much like the night we just witnessed, the Mets offense then basically does nothing. And at 2-1 in the fifth inning, Clay Holmes puts the first two guys on base. Mendy says, I got to get him out of the game, rightfully so. And here's Gregory Soto to say, I'll light the game on fire too. I'll give up an RBI single. I'll take a 3-1 game and make it a 4-1 game. And here's Ryan Stanek to do the damn same thing after Gregory Soto puts more guys on base and hits two more batters and gives up another run. And so game three turned into nothing. It turned into Juan Soto having a nice individual game, including his solo home run that meant nothing late. It turned into Clay Holmes giving you another not good enough major league start. It turned into key pieces in the bullpen acquired by the brilliant David Stearns that absolutely backfired. And it turned into an absolute laugher. That's your recap for game three. It doesn't deserve any more of our oxygen. What does deserve our oxygen is me repeating something I said a few minutes ago, because Carlos Mendoza did it in game three and he did it in game four, and it's got to stop. When a lefty is on the mound, you don't have to play Luis Angel Acuna. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. Luis Angel Acuna doesn't hit. He hasn't hit. He hasn't been in the major leagues most of the season. He's good defensively. We all love that. He can steal a base. You can't steal a base when you're not on base. Did you know that? And since Luis Angel Acuna has no chance to get on base, why are you starting him? Why are you not playing Brett Baty? Do you realize that since the middle of July, big sample size, Brett Baty has an 840 OPS against left-handed pitching? Now, do you think I made that up? You think I just said, let me pick a random date, pick a good number, and claim Brett Baty has hit that against left-handers? I didn't make it up. I'm a sick freak. I wanted to see. Am I just delusional, or does it feel like Brett Baty has had good at-bats against lefties? Is that just me making it up, or are there numbers to back it up? And there are numbers to back it up. And those numbers to back it up make it so that Carlos Mendoza's last two games of this series, not playing Brett Baty, so he could play a guy, and I know, I get some of you guys fell in love with him last year. It was great. He did an admirable job filling in for Francisco Lindor. Golf clap. I know that Luis Angel Acuna, it was said about him via Francisco Lindor in spring training, he needs the bright lights. Give him the bright lights. He'll perform. I know all of that. Now let's go by what he's done. He has not hit this season. He got an opportunity early. There were some promising moments. He didn't hit. He became a utility player. The Mets then said, let's send him down. He was in the minor leagues pretty much a majority of the year. He comes back because he does give them value as a pinch runner and a defensive weapon off the bench. He gives them no value as a starter. He does not hit. So in three games in this series, this manager, A, used him as a pinch hitter, stupid, so we couldn't use him later to pinch run, and instead uses Ronnie Mauricio for Pete Alonso when he should have used Acuna because Acuna shouldn't have pinch hit. So number one, he uses a guy who can't hit as a pinch hitter. Then two games later, Because God forbid Brett Beatty, who has an 839 OPS against lefties since the middle of July, those are true numbers, look it up, he says, I can't play him. Can't do it. So I'm going to play Luis Angel Acuna to take away his best value to this team, which is as a pinch runner. Great work. Great work. Brilliant work. So I apologize. It's been 35 minutes. It's mostly me bitching and complaining. I'm sure Pete Hoffman has a more positive view over what happened in the final few games of this series and what's about to happen more so than me. So, Hoff, please enlighten me why everything's going to be okay.
I'm sorry. You must have me confused with positive Tommy. Positive? I'm positive that this team is not going to make the playoffs. That's where we're at. I said this earlier to you. I said this on yesterday's WFAN Daily. I said this with BT and Sal. The only thing that I could possibly think that's good right now about this team is they keep on losing, and then maybe if they get they're right now still neck and neck for that final playoff spot. Mm-hmm. If they drop out of the playoffs and they have a week and a half to go, maybe finally something will click and be like, oh, wait a second. We need to actually play games. We have to try to win games because now it's not all in front of us. We're screwed. It's not if we win games that we're in the playoffs, because you've officially are out of the playoffs. I think that's the only way for them to actually wake up is to just lose games, be out of the playoffs, and then say, okay, we actually need to do something and change the way we're approaching this.
Here's why I disagree with you. I'm going to use the game four of this series as an example. When they opened up a 4-0 lead in the top of the first inning, didn't you think in your mind, if they ever blow this lead, they're dead? They will never recover from it. Like, even when the Phillies tied it and it looked like Reed Garrett was going to wiggle his way through the sixth inning and keep it tied, didn't you think to yourself, as soon as the Phillies take the lead, it's over, they're going to roll over and that'll be it?
Yeah, of course.
So why wouldn't you think the same thing with the standings?
Well, because that's the only hope. Like, that's my last hurrah. There's no other, there's nothing else they can do right now to change this team. Like, this is it. There's no, oh, well, when this guy comes back from, Kodai Senga comes back from the minors, everything's going to work out. When this person comes off of the IL, everything's going to, there's absolutely nothing else they could change.
They could they could do lineup changes. That's always a possibility. When we could go back to my original idea of leading off Juan Soto, but he's not going to do it. And I don't even know if lineup changes make a damn difference. So you're right. This is the roster. These guys in the room have to just find it within themselves to play better. And there's no evidence that they're going to do that over the final 15 games based on what's happened over the last 90 games.
No, and I get that, and I think people think that it's nuts to continue to lose games, but I'm just saying what hit them rock bottom last year was when they were just so bad, and it was they were like at rock bottom, right? Well, they're not at rock bottom right now because technically they're still in the playoffs. Everything's okay. Everything's in front of them.
Well, that the rock bottom line, you're right. It's not if this is rock bottom, then great. That means the Mets are making the playoffs. That's why John Smoltz and Joe Davis don't know what the hell they're talking about. They haven't hit rock bottom yet. What rock bottom will look like? Stay tuned. You know, you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake. It's a true crowd pleaser, light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot. Ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan. It's the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. Let's read some of your angry emails. It is, yes, 99.999% pissed off angry. Mike writes, guys, I'm trying to find the words for the last three innings. It is the eighth inning now. This group is simply not likable this season. Starling Marte and Jose Siri, of all people, goofing around with the opposing dugout while your team is on the field was the final straw. Enough of Mr. 80 games a season. Enough of these pitchers getting dominated by Harrison Bader and not brushing him back off the plate. Whether or not this team truly is soft, they are,
all they ever display is too cool for school style front-running swagger. No fire, no gritty hustle, trying to scratch and claw for a win. Just a gotta stay positive and it'll turn it around attitude. Last year, Mendy seemed to hold these guys to a standard. What changed this year? Every guy has taken multiple turns being boneheads on the field. Nary a benching or a statement. Is Iglesias and Martinez really the leadership that they had last year? And something needs to be said for this entire pitching roster falling off the rails this year. Has the league figured out Hefner's game plan? Seems like Harrison Bader knows. Anyway, get these final 2 weeks over with. Whether they stumble into the playoffs or not, more than half this roster needs to be turned over. That includes a few staple players. I'm never going to be at the point of get this season over with. Now, if they were 15 games out and we were doing Rico Bronyas while the Mets were playing out the string like we did in 2023, yeah, I think when you get to the final few weeks, it's just get this over with. Maybe I'm delusional, and I will remain consistent about this because it's the way I view the sport more than it is the way I view this team. I want to get to the playoffs, and I want to roll the die. That doesn't mean I'm confident. How could I be? This has been a bad team since June. But I don't buy this. Just get it over with. They stumble in the playoffs. They're going to get smoked anyway. I don't know that. I know logic would tell you that, but I could bore you half to death with examples of teams where that didn't happen. And the only one I want to bring up, because it's the only one that feels sort of similar, is actually the team that haunts us, the 2006 St. Louis Cardinals. They weren't a good team. And not only were they not a good team, they won a division by default. If you go back and look closer at that team, they got off to a good start, kind of like this Met team. And from late May on, like that big of a sample size, they sucked. They were a below 500 team from late May until the end of the season. And there was zero evidence whatsoever that they were going to go on a run. And they did. And obviously the sport's different now because there are more layers of the postseason with this wild card round. But because of stories like that, I just don't believe that. Screw it. Even if they make the playoffs, who cares? They're going to get smoked. Now, they may end up getting smoked. That's certainly a possibility, if not the likeliest outcome. But it doesn't mean I would just whatever this season. I don't believe that. I don't think Hoff I'll ever believe that.
Yeah, no, I want them to make the playoffs. I don't think they are at this point in time. I want them to make the playoffs. I don't want the season to be over. And I agree, anything can happen. We saw last year, like, the Mets scraped into the playoffs, and they went to the NLCS. They went to game six of the NLCS. That wasn't a fluke. Like, that doesn't just happen. That's because you catch fire at the right time. And the Mets, then this is the difference between this year's team and last year's team. Last year, they were in a playoff race from June.
Yeah.
They have.
This is the opposite because they almost didn't have to play important games because they're locked into a playoff spot. That was the assumption a lot of us made, myself included. And so the pennant race is new, you know, unless you consider the NL East race something anyone cared about, which I'm not sure how much they did. So I think that's fair. Jason writes, how do you even think they're going to do anything based on their record since the middle of June? Should David Stearns or Steve Cohen say something? I think Juan Soto has the Jack Parkman aura and it trickles down. Resentment from all this guy is making all this money and doesn't give a bleep. I don't give a bleep. The guy's talented, but just cares about stats and money. OMG made no money, had all the grit in the world, and it was infectious. I don't think Steve Cohen or David Stearns saying anything right now makes a difference other than trying to placate us. I think it's easy to look at Soto as the difference because he was added to this team and he does make a lot of money. I don't really think there is resentment, and I could be wrong about this, between individual players in baseball because I think they feel like they're all on the same team. Like, Soto making a lot of money can lead to others making a lot of money. So I think that's something we create, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem right now is, A, their pitching has been awful for a while. And when they had that great start to the season pitching-wise, we all knew it wouldn't last, but we didn't think it would just go in the gutter like this.
That I think that's a problem. And just being so wildly inconsistent offensively. I think there are baseball reasons for this, not the normal, we got to find another reason to describe this.
I just got to say something. Like, that's idiotic to say that, oh, people are resenting how much money Juan Soto's making. I mean, they're all getting paid. The only guys that aren't getting paid are Acuna, Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez, those guys. I mean, that's it. But every offensive player on this team is making a chunk of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't think that's the issue. Angelo writes, last time I wrote in, I said, all we can do is laugh. And here I am again, back for more. Because honestly, that's all I've got left. No energy to be mad. No energy to take this team seriously. Just enough to laugh. So let's laugh together at this LDDF limp dick dumpster fire offense. That's it. That's all the energy I've got. Like last time, Evan, I need to hear a laugh. So let's hear it. And hey, Hoff, why not join in? Two laughs are better than one. Evan, lead the charge. Tell every viewer right now just to laugh because that's all we got. All right, listeners and viewers, on the count of three, we're all going to laugh. A one, a two, and a three.
We suck. Steve blows. We suck. I can't wait for the Jets. Give me Brooklyn Nets basketball. That feel better?
Yeah, I guess I feel a little bit better.
All right, good.
Yeah, I got to feel better.
Oh, here's a funny one for you. Maybe this will make you laugh. This was off the podcast. You know what's going on. I texted you this, but someone from corporate asked if we wanted to get T-shirts for the playoffs for Rico Bronya made up.
Imagine that. Rico Bronya, 2025 playoffs. It's like ordering a 2007 National League East Championship shirt. Tim writes, this is my least favorite team ever. I have seen some egregiously awful Mets teams in my lifetime. I remember rooting for lineups that featured the likes of Marlon Byrd, Scott Hairston, Eric Young Jr., and Jason Prity as the team's better hitters. I also hate this team so much more than any of those. Reason number one, the expectations. The team has the second highest payroll in baseball and has managed to be the fourth worst team in baseball since mid-June. I'd much rather go into a season expecting nothing and get a little playoff tease than have a World Series aspirations and get nowhere close. Reason number two, no fight. Ninth inning comebacks aren't easy, but it's pretty difficult to play an entire season of games and not manage to win a single game in which you've trailed going into the ninth inning. Even terrible teams luck into at least a few of those. Couple that with a pretty impressive inability to win close games and a strong tendency to lay down and give up as soon as we're down three or more runs, and you get a team that is straight up weak. Number three, the players. We could talk all we want about how Mendy or Stearns are at fault, and sure, they played a part, but this mess falls primarily on the players. So many times this season, I have felt that regardless of who we put at the plate or on the mound, we will get absolutely nothing out of them. And almost every time, I've been right. These guys aren't usually incompetent and have been solid in previous seasons, but as soon as they became 2025 Mets, they magically started sucking donkey balls in the biggest moments. I'm expecting the Mets season to end at the hands of the Marlins in what will be a touching tribute to the Mets teams of 2007-2008. I almost hope they are eliminated before then, but I have a feeling they'll drag it out just long enough to rip all of our hearts out at the last possible second, because this team hates us and loves to torture us. And as a result, I hate them. That was very well said. This is, it makes me laugh every time the Mets have a bad loss or right now a bad run. That's when the emails get overflowed. And I wish I could read every single one of these because some of them are funny. And they make me laugh. Want to rip David Stearns? Same as last year. Oh, Evan, this season feels like last year, but in reverse. I like last year's version better. This sucks. It is odd how it does feel like the complete opposite. From good start, bad start, to a specific date having the season turn, to kind of where this is going. And right now, you know,
someone asked me the other day, it was Tiki Barber. He said, what's your confidence level? I said, I still think they'll make the playoffs. I've said it here on the Rico. 75% likely. And then after they lost on Tuesday, he said, what's your percentage? I said, it's 62%. It's gone down a little bit, but I'm still confident. And then before they played game four, I said, I got to be honest, Teague, I'm slightly above 50-50 now. Well, if you ask me in this moment, as we record this Rico Bronya, right after they lose to the Philadelphia Phillies in such creative fashion, being retired 25 in a row by Jesus Luzardo, and then finally Yoan Duran, my confidence level is now less than 50%. Like, I am now expecting that they're actually going to miss the playoffs because they had a big lead and they didn't need to do anything crazy to hold on to it. But what they have put themselves in the position to do is that, what if the Reds rattle off 8 out of 10? They're about to play the A's. They've got games against teams that are not that good. Like, there's only 15 games left, 16 for Cincinnati. What if the Mets do actually play reasonably well? They go 9-6. But what if the Reds play better? And that's what blowing a lead does. You give it the possibility that a team that's close to you just plays lights out ball. And you just don't play well enough. And so I think by blowing this lead and having it go all the way down to a measly game, and that's what it is, because you only should look at the loss column, and once it's tied, it is out of your hands because the Reds have the tiebreaker, as we all know. You put yourself in a spot where if the Reds just play really, really well, it may not even be, I don't want to say it won't be your fault because it is the Mets' fault. They've allowed this to happen, but they could play well over their final 15 and it won't be enough. Here's the Reds' schedule, by the way. 3 in Sacramento against the A's.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns.
You
know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
They could win all 3. Not saying they will, but they could. 3 in St. Louis against the under 500 Cardinals. I mean, they could win all 3 there too. 4 at home against the Cubs, which feels like more of a challenge, but ask yourself this, what are the Cubs going to be playing for? They may be in that no man's zone of they're not winning the Central, they're not missing the playoffs, so who knows what the Cubs are playing for? Then 3 against the Pirates, they're not any good, and then this is what really scares me, they end the season in Milwaukee. Well, what the hell are the Brewers playing for if they could at least maintain a 3-4-5 game lead on the number one seed? And by the way, even if they have the number one seed, what are you playing for? You still have a first round bye. So you look at those games that are left, 16 for Cincinnati. They can't go 11-5. And if they go 11-5, now you put the Mets in a spot where they better go 10-5. That's what they'd have to do. And so that is what's making me very scared and, dare I say, negative, that you people are going to be right. And by you people, I mean everybody, because it seems like the wins are at, the Mets are not going to make the playoffs. Now, I want to do something very difficult. I believe in commitment. I do. Said it to my wife when I married her. I said it to anybody. I am committed to doing certain things. I am committed to taking out the recyclables on Friday. I am committed to doing laundry on Saturday. I'm committed to the Rico Bronya. How many times have I ever not done a Rico after a series ended? Like, you could count it on one hand. In fact, there is one that jumps out at me. It was back in 2022. It was an important series. My son was in the hospital. And Pete Hoffman did a great job, and he stepped up, and he did that Rico Bronya. But I'll go to Europe, and I'll do a Rico. I'll go to Disney, I'll do a Rico. Same with Hoff. We are ultra committed. Now, you may be asking yourself, what the hell are you even talking about right now? Guys, before you hate me and say, Evan, you can't do this, it's the wrong thing to do, we have committed to picking a Rico on the Man Now star of the series for every series. We made that promise to this audience. So I understand that it doesn't feel appropriate and it doesn't feel right, but I have a chart in front of me, Pete, and that chart is filled. Every series features a Rico on the Man Now star of the series. When they got swept by the Pittsburgh Pirates, Brandon Waddell was the Man Now. When they got swept by the San Diego Padres, Mark Vientos was the Man Now. When they got swept by Tampa, the infamous series that set this season on fire, Starling Marte was the Man Now. So even in sweeps, it's important. So Pete Hoffman, I'm going to let you start. In God's name is the Rico, I'm the Man Now, star of this dreadful series?
Juan Soto? Just kidding. Just kidding.
It could
even
be.
Even though it could be, I would have to go to Nolan McLean because he's the only person that I feel like did their job, battled the way he was supposed to battle. I wish he could have gone more, but that's the guy. He's the Man Now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you because – when you look at all now, as far as offense is concerned, I'll give you some of the numbers. Like Juan Soto was 5 for 16. He hit a home run. He drove in 2 runs. He stole a bunch of bases. Like those numbers are not bad. But I think there's a lot of negative that jumps out at you. One of which being him trying to steal third base in a 5-run game, or even going back to game one, they lost the game 1-0 and Juan Soto couldn't do anything. So the numbers aren't bad, but I agree. I'd have a tough time giving it to him. The other offensive player I'd have to consider, and I honestly think I'd give it to this guy, if not for the miscue in game two of this series, and that's Mark Vientos. Because Mark Vientos, the ground ball to third, and he was actually having a good defensive game. If you missed us talking about this, go back to episode 545. We broke down game one and game two of this series. But Vientos took his time on the Bryson Stott ground ball, stop, beat it. It turned into a big inning that let the game slip away. Vientos made a few other good defensive plays in that game. And if you go back to game one, the 1-0 game, he's the one who should have hit the RBI double to tie the game. If not for Mendy not having Acuna available, and if not for Ronnie Mauricio getting a horrible jump, like Vientos would have been a hero. And then he hits a home run in game two of this series. So overall, he was 3 for 14 with a home run and 2 RBIs, but he had some significant hits. Like, even in the finale of this series, he drove in the first run behind in the count. So I think Vientos had a case. I cannot in good conscience give it to him because that miscue in game two pissed me off so much. Plus, it's tough to give it to anybody in this offense. So honorable mention, I guess, or sort of honorable mention, but you're right. I think you nailed it. It has to be Nolan McLean, the only guy on this team with freaking balls at this point.
Yeah. So can you believe? I'm sorry, just to go back because I haven't really had the chance to talk about it with you. Jesus Luzardo gave up 4 runs in the first inning, and then he went on to pitch 7 more innings after that. We can't get a guy to go 7 innings deep. This guy, after giving up 4 runs, pitched 7 no-hit innings after that.
Yes. And as pointed out on the Fox broadcast, the last Philly to give up 4 runs in the first inning and then somehow pitch 8 innings and allow 4 runs was Steve Carlton.
So it's not like it happens every other week. It's mind-numbing. It's mind-numbing that that's what this was. But we do agree Nolan McLean is the man now?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Nolan McLean is the man now, yes.
Well, congratulations to Nolan McLean, because this is actually the third time he has won this award, which is kind of crazy because that's tied for fourth on the team. The guy's been here for a couple of weeks. He's racking up Rico, I'm the man now stars of the series.
He's made five starts. He's won three times. I mean, it's outrageous.
That is outrageous. This one is a little by default, but nevertheless. Now, the award we do want to hand out, I'm sure this has been highly anticipated, is the net negative. Because when you get swept by four games of the Philadelphia Phillies, there are going to be a lot of candidates. So there are two that jump out at me. It doesn't mean there aren't many other honorable mentions, but there are two guys that jump out at me. Both of them are offensive players. Because you could certainly give this to Clay Holmes. You can certainly give this to Reed Garrett. You can certainly give this to Gregory Soto. You can certainly give this to who else? Let me look at my scorecard. I wouldn't say Sean Manaea. Like, he wasn't great, but I wouldn't give it to him.
David Peterson?
Nah, come on. He left with a lead, Pete.
I know.
That's a harsh net negative.
I mean, he could have done better, too. He could have gone seven shutout innings.
We all could do better. It doesn't mean. But here are the two guys that jump out at me. Francisco Alvarez and Francisco Lindor. Mm. Those two guys jump out at me. I know there's a lot of Pete Alonso haters. Alonso was 4 for 16. He wasn't clutch. He wasn't impactful. I get it. But Lindor was 1 for 15. Like, he got on base twice this entire series, if I'm not mistaken. A walk at the end of game one, and then the base hit that really got them off to a good start in game four. But he was 1 for 15 in this series. And considering he's the leadoff hitter and how important he is, that's a huge one. The other guy I've got to consider is Francisco Alvarez, who put together the single worst at bat in the history of the freaking sport. When he came up in game one, down 1-0 with second and third. So, and by the way, 1 for 11 with, let's see, how many times did he strike out? 1 for 11 with 5 strikeouts. So he was awful offensively. And that at bat really jumps out at me. Another honorable mention I got to give is Jeff McNeil. I'm sorry. I apologize, Jeff, but you misjudged the fly ball. That basically led to the Phillies comeback. He went 0 for 4 in the finale of this series. Let's see, what else did he do? Oh, 1 for 3 with an RBI single and 1 for 4 with an infield hit.
Let me do one too. I have somebody to add. Jose Siri. He was terrible in center field too. I thought that guy was supposed to be a stud out there. He misplayed a ball. Yep. It was a game two or three. And where I was just scratching my freaking head, be like, this is the guy that we were waiting all season for?
Turn the wrong way. Yeah. I mean, those are all good honorable mentions. To me, it comes down to Alvarez and Lindor. Which Francisco do you want to give it to?
I'm giving it to Alvarez. And the reason why is not to say that Lindor doesn't deserve it, but Alvarez, did you say it or did the TV, somebody on the TV said it, where the last strikeout he had, the ball was a mile away or a yard away or whatever it was. Like, he was not into any of these at-bats. He was terrible. He's been awful at the plate.
Yeah. The only reason I would, like, Lindor keeps it close is because of who he is. He's the leadoff hitter. He's just so important. They need him. He's the catalyst. But I'm going to agree with you and give it to Francisco Alvarez, because that last at-bat, look, you strike out against Johan Duran. It's not like people strike out against him. He struck out the side in game four of this series. Soto, Alonso, Vientos, they all look bad. But that at-bat was the most important at bat. Him and McNeil too. And that's another negative towards Jeff McNeil. He did come up before Alvarez, where all he needed was contact to tie the game up. He did almost get a double. He ripped one down the line. It was barely foul. So I think the McNeil at bat is up there too, in terms of importance in this series. But the Alvarez one was monstrous. And I think the patheticness of the at bat brings him up a level. So congratulations to Francisco Alvarez. You're the net negative.
Yes. A round of applause. And now we get to Jake. Jacob DeGrom, I appreciate what you did. I appreciate your time as a New York Met, and I will be at Citi Field, and I can't wait to give you a standing ovation. But as soon as I'm done standing and I sit down, I apologize. I need my team to bomb you. I need it to be ugly. I need you knocked out in the third inning because I think the Mets not only need to win a game on Friday to break this losing streak, but they need an offensive explosion. And it's got to continue all weekend. It's got to continue against Patrick Corbin. It's got to continue against Jacob Latz, the left-hander. That's going to start Sunday. The Texas Rangers have played well, and they have played well dealing with a ton of injuries to their team. The New York Mets need to step up. They need to show guts, and they need to sweep the Texas Rangers. Would I be happy with 2 out of 3? I'd be happy with any freaking win this team could get. Give me one. Let's start with one. But they've got to bomb Jake. I do want to spend a few minutes on this. I fully expect that he will get cheers from everyone. I remember when he left and I screamed into a microphone, this very microphone, he's gone and he's not coming back. And I was very devastated, very upset by what happened. I understand it. But there were a lot of Met fans that were basically like, screw you, Jake. You don't want to be here. You're always hurt. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And what I would calmly say to Met fans is I said, just wait. Because time heals all wounds. And what happens next for the Mets, for Jake, for the franchise, will probably lead us to a place where even those that were bitter against him or didn't like him will appreciate him. So Jake gets hurt. The Mets are horrible in 23. The Mets are really good in 24. I think the DeGrom-Mets breakup has been almost innocent, right? For a couple of years, it was like, yeah, all right, whatever. But I think as he walks back into Citi Field with the Mets featuring, you know, some problems in their rotation, I think that there will be a longing when he takes the mound. Now, this is not me relitigating fights about his contract or if the Mets should have kept him. That's not what this is about. It's just about you long for something you don't have. And the Mets, while they have good young pitching we're excited about, they've literally made a combined 7 starts. So there isn't reliable pitching on this team. And I think when Jake takes them out, a part of the reason why he will get cheered, and it will be universal, is that whether you wanted to keep him or not, or you thought he wanted to stay or not, you miss him. And if you don't miss him, or you say you don't miss him, you're lying. And that's okay. Sometimes the truth is very difficult to get to. How can you not? The pitching staff has been awful. Clay Holmes is in the rotation. Sean Manaea has been quickly proving last year was a fluke. David Peterson, we're excited when he gets through 5. And again, yeah, we're very excited about Sproat and Tong and McLean, but it's very inexperienced and new. So when Jake takes the mound, and he hasn't been great lately, so is it possible the Mets beat him up? Absolutely. I think that there's going to be a longing. There's going to be a man. I wish he was still here. Now, I made you this prediction a few days ago, Pete. I said, we're going to get swept, and then we're going to bomb Jacob DeGrom. So far, I've gotten the sweet part right. We'll see if the bombing of Jacob DeGrom actually happens on Friday. But deep in my soul, I actually think that's going to happen. I think the Mets are going to hit him.
I don't know, man. This team has been so flat. I feel like he's going to get revenge on the Mets for all those games that they couldn't put up offense for him.
You know, when someone faces their former team, they can go about it a few different ways. Aaron Rodgers wanted to stick it to the New York Jets, right? Harrison Bader wanted to stick it to the New York Mets. I don't get a vibe, and I was reading Jake's comments the other day to some Rangers reporters and to MLB.com, and he said all the right things. Met fans always treated me well. I'm really excited to go back. I don't think that's a guy that's trying to stick it to us. And that doesn't mean anything other than I think he may go out there, look around, get a standing ovation, and sometimes that may negatively affect people. It doesn't necessarily make him say, good, now I'm going to, you know, screw you. Like, if he has an emotional bone in his body, and I know Jake always played it very straight and didn't show much emotion, but if he has a little bit as he gets that standing ovation, who knows how it affects him? And I kind of have a weird feeling it is, and I think the Mets are going to take advantage of it. So, look, I could be wrong. I hope I'm obviously not, because I'm actually giving you a positive Met prediction. But I think they're going to have success against Jacob deGrom, and I do think he's going to get a 100% ovation from Met fans. I don't think anyone is going to boo him.
That aspect, I think you're correct in. 100%. There's no doubt about it. I mean, even when he left, people might have been pissed off, but it wasn't because – I really don't think it was because he hated the Mets that he had to leave. I think that he just wanted to move away. I think he had his – you know, he wanted to move his family somewhere else. Texas was a place he wanted to move his family to, and that's okay. No problem. On top of that, too, there's just one issue, another thing real quick, why I think that he's going to have a good game. They're in a playoff hunt.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about a team, they've been fighting to get back into this playoff race, and they're neck and neck. They're right there. He doesn't want to give up a dud. Now, the question is to you, if he does have a dud, is Jonah Tung going to be able to withstand the Rangers' offense?
I don't know yet about Jonah Tung. Like, I'm still trying. He's only made two starts, so it's obviously normal to not know how to feel. But I really don't know how to feel yet about Jonah Tung in terms of confidence or, you know, how I feel about him or how I think he's going to pitch. His first start was such a throwaway because of the fact he had a 12-0 lead. And in his second start, it was so weird. Like, the only hits he gave up were home runs, and he walked a bunch of guys. So I'm not sure what to think about Jonah Tung, but I'm excited to watch him. I think part of what makes Friday so intriguing, and it's been intriguing for a while since, you know, a month ago when I told you DeGrom's lined up for Friday, is the fact that he is going up against a young stud. And right now, as Met fans, we're all depressed. If you've listened to this entire Rico, you can hear from my tone, I'm pissed, I'm depressed, I'm all angry about this team. The hope that we have are the young pitchers. That's the hope we have. No one trusts the offense. No one trusts David Peterson. No one trusts Clay Holmes. No one trusts the bullpen outside of Edwin Diaz. The hope is Tung, Sproat, and McClain. And we're about to get them 3 days in a row. So I think that that's the hope that we have going in to this three-game series against the Texas Rangers. And speaking of this three-game series against the Texas Rangers, it leads us off to my pick. And the pick segment is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. I feel obligated to have the pick be revolving around Jacob deGrom. I feel like I have to. So I went to the FanDuel Sportsbook app and I looked at Jacob deGrom's strikeout over-under, which is set up at 5.5. I'm going to take the under because I think, like I said, the Mets are going to hit him. I think they're going to have good at-bats against him. I don't think they're going to strike out a lot. I think they got all the strikeouts out of their system on Thursday when Jesus Luzardo struck out 10 and Yan Duran struck out 3 more. So I will give you a positive, which is the under on the Grom strikeouts, which is only 5.5. I hold myself accountable. I got the last one wrong. Nolan McClain over-under on strikeouts. I said over 5.5. He struck out 5. So right on the number, I didn't get the victory. Once again, that was my picks, and it's the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Pete Hoffman of the New York Mets going to make the postseason?
No. It sucks, but they're not.
Unfortunately, as I sit here right now, I have to agree. It feels like we are headed towards another 07, 08, and a very long, complicated offseason, because I never expected that this would happen. But let's hope we're wrong. We do appreciate you downloading and listening and hanging out with us on episode 546 of the Rico Bronya. Hopefully this was a therapy session. And let this be a reminder. I get angry. I get upset. I yell and I scream. I think after experiencing yet another anniversary of September 11th and all the tragedies this country has faced over the last few weeks and months, at least we know that this baseball thing, as much as it annoys us, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It is the toy store of life, I think, as Joe B used to say. So, perspective. And as much as I yell and scream, trust me, I have perspective. So hug your wife or hug your husband or hug your kids or hug your parents. Hug somebody, because that's truly what matters. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Rico Brogna.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Brogna podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.